I'd like to welcome in our first guest to the program, a new guest from the organization Call to Freedom. We would like to welcome in Executive Director and Founder of that wonderful program, Becky Rasmussen, on line one. First and foremost, welcome. It's great to introduce you and have you on the program. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thank you for having us. We look forward to the opportunity, and thanks for giving us a voice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of was off time here a little bit to afternoons, just try to kind of search around for new guests and that sort of thing. Obviously, we love our recurring guests, but it's nice to kind of work another organization into the rotation. First and foremost, for people not familiar with Call to Freedom, can you kind of give us an overview, Becky, of what the program is about?
Yeah, Call to Freedom is a 501c3 nonprofit that was founded in early 2016, but we offer supportive services to those who have been victimized by human trafficking, and that includes sex and labor trafficking and also sexual exploitation. And so that includes a variety of different services. If you are familiar with human trafficking, if you're not, anyone who comes out of those situations needs a lot of support, anywhere from mental health, sometimes addiction's a factor, to having no money, sometimes not having your identification, to housing. And so all of those things really need to be for a victim of human trafficking to support them in their transition out of that life, because they remain vulnerable. And so we also have a housing project we call Marissa's House that supports not only women survivors of trafficking, but also their children. And that's a new program, or expanded part of that program, that we took on April 1st of this year. And so one of the things about us is, and survivors had said to me, I don't want to keep retelling my story. Having a victim of any type of trauma, having to retell their story is very traumatizing, and sometimes, you know, they don't seek help because of that. And so that's one thing that Call to Freedom's been very focused on, is to really have that opportunity to provide all of those services, from employment to addiction to mental health to just getting their identification card, and supporting them with housing so that they don't have to go through some of our systems that sometimes are complex to get all the services that they need. So we wrap those under our umbrella so they don't have to, they can focus on their healing versus focus on some of those basic needs.
Now, your story on how you started this program, I had a chance to read it earlier this morning. Can you share with our listeners the story in 2015 and on how you kind of started this, and how almost God was kind of speaking to you and wanting you to start this?
Yeah. You know, I had actually been exposed earlier in about 2010 to human trafficking stories, and I knew at some point in time I would be involved. I didn't know at what level, but God did. And for me, this is a call. It isn't something that I would personally take on if God wasn't in it, because there is so many complex situations that happen when you're navigating an individual out of human trafficking. And so 2015 is when I really felt sparked to get back involved with human trafficking or anti-human trafficking movement, and ended up at a Call to Freedom luncheon. You know, everybody Googles everything. So I had Googled anti-human trafficking in South Dakota, and there was a program called Call to Freedom that was under another nonprofit. So at that point in time, it was not its own nonprofit. It was under an organization called Tapestry International. And they were kind of just doing ministry, not to the point where we're doing now, where we've expanded some of those services. But got connected, just started getting familiar with what was happening in South Dakota, and ended up in Sturgis, South Dakota, at the Sturgis Rally. It was the 75th anniversary of the Sturgis Rally. It was my first time ever there. And so we were doing outreach, and, you know, a lot of times at large events, vulnerable people are there, and sometimes some negative activity, like illegal activity, happens within large groups of people. And so we were reaching out to individuals that we just felt were vulnerable, and just spreading awareness and handing out information. And I had an encounter with a young girl who forever changed my life. Her name was Marissa, and connected with her for a short time, about 10 minutes, had a brief conversation with her, and the last words that she said to me is, you have no idea what kind of day I have. You have no idea. And she departed. And I knew something wasn't right. She didn't disclose to me at that time. And the next day I got connected with a group that was doing search and rescue within Sturgis. And so they would typically go into large events and have a book put together of missing kids from a 4 to 5 state radius. And long story short, something just rose up in me and said, look for the girl you met the day before, Marissa. And was flipping through the book and came across her picture. And that really opened my eyes to how some of this trafficking is facilitated, because they began to tell me that that she had been found earlier in 2015. Actually, in 2014, was found again in 2014, went missing in 2015. And I began to ask the questions, how do you find somebody, and then how do you lose them again? How do they are once missing and then go missing again? And they began to tell me about human trafficking rings, and that there were only 298 beds across the United States for victims of human trafficking, and less than a handful for boys. And that the needs of a trafficking victim to get out of trafficking situations are so diverse and so deep that if they don't have those services, they're actually re-recruited by different groups, and these groups talk to each other. And I didn't know what to do with that. I walked away, and at that time, the individual who was running the program, Call to Freedom, said, I feel like I'm supposed to transition this to you, and thus began the journey. I wasn't expecting that, but I prayed, and that's exactly what I felt like the Lord was leading me to do. And so we established Call to Freedom November 2015 as its own nonprofit. Got filed that paperwork, was accepted January of 2016, started simply with volunteers doing this work. In the first year, 30 survivors came forward with about 2 people in an office, and they kept coming as we started spreading the word and we did awareness. Survivors kept coming forward. Families would follow me to speaking engagements and would tell me, this is happening to my child. I don't know what to do. And fast forward to today, in 2022, we are at 27 staff, 24 full-time, 3 part-time, and God has always been behind this mission. And we have the privilege of walking alongside the journey of survivors of sex and labor trafficking and allowing them to find healing through our program, but through connecting them also with mentors and spiritual mentors if that's what they desire, so that they can have every opportunity to grasp a hold of their healing process, exit safely, and be able to go on with their lives at the best that they can after those situations. So it's definitely been a journey. I'm so grateful to this community. I'm grateful to the Lord that he called me. It has not been easy, but I must tell you, you know, even our first survivor who walks through the door, she just started her own family and is doing well. And the grandmother of that survivor just wrote a book that'll be launched December of this year in 2022. So we're seeing a lot of success with our program as well, and that's why we do what we do.
I would imagine that one of the questions that I have, and maybe other people have as well, is how do these young people, women, sometimes children, how do they get, I guess, trapped in becoming trafficked?
Sure. So the definition of human trafficking is the use of force, fraud, or coercion to exploit somebody for one of 2 things, sex or labor, unless you're under the age of 18. If you're under the age of 18, according to state statutes, which we worked on that legislation, and also federal statute, you don't have to prove force, fraud, or coercion. So it looks a little different for under the age of 18. And what that means is individual who just has the intent to traffic somebody, and there's an exchange of money, and they weren't able to leave that situation. And so what we're seeing, I'll just start with youth, because I really like to talk to parents to get educated on this issue, is we're seeing, especially since COVID, an increase of online social media interaction and recruiting. And so what these individuals will do is, we say grooming and recruiting, I really think it's more like manipulation and recruiting, because there's a lot of manipulation that happens in building relationships with vulnerable individuals. So what a trafficker who's a business person will do is they will identify a victim. And sometimes it's just as simple as your kids going on social media and expressing some emotional gaps. My parents just got divorced. I feel lost. Boom, target. They'll pose as somebody who really cares. They'll pose as somebody who understands them, accepts them, gives them a place to belong when they feel like maybe they don't belong at that time in their life. And they'll slowly isolate them and draw them near to them. And so that conversation sometimes takes up to 6 months. That survivor I talked about was the first survivor to walk through the doors of Call to Freedom. She actually, her family met her trafficker. They had a relationship. They dated. And they knew something wasn't right about him, but they didn't ever expect that this person would be have the intention of selling their daughter or granddaughter. And so what I always tell people is go to calltofreedom.org. We're starting what we call parent connection classes, which really allow parents to get educated on this topic, and there's a three-part series of that. And those are free to the community. You can Zoom in or you can attend live. We will be doing those on an ongoing basis because what we're seeing not only is it young girls and women, but also boys. And there aren't a lot of services for young boys out there within this line of work. And so we're talking a lot about young girls getting recruited, and now these traffickers, since this is business, have been really in the last few months, in the last probably 6 months, we've seen this shift to targeting young boys. And so they'll ask for pictures. They'll ask them, you know, hey, send me a picture. They'll be posing as a young girl. And they'll send a picture, and then they begin to blackmail these young kids. Send me more pictures, and then those pictures end up on pornography sites. And some of these kids are so scared that they never tell people. And, you know, we're seeing this increase of suicide attached to this as well. And so that's exploitation. That is a form of trafficking. And so we need to spread that word so that parents can really be involved with their kids and understanding who they're having conversations with and how that's being facilitated.
And I would imagine that you probably at some point in time get the, well, that stuff doesn't happen in South Dakota.
Yeah. We for sure get that a lot, and a lot of people that don't want to believe that it happens in South Dakota. Why is South Dakota so vulnerable? We have three of the poorest counties in the United States located here in South Dakota with our Indian country and our reservations. You have those poverty levels. You know, there's a lot of what we call familial trafficking, and it's probably one of the hardest type of trafficking to understand, but it's moms, dads, aunts, uncles that are trafficking their own kids. And that really is takes a lot of education to first responders within our youth systems, within our schools, to understand how this is facilitated. We also have 29 and 90 coming through, which we call the Midwest Pipeline. And so we have these intersections going where we call it transit trafficking. So they go to events. They go to North Dakota. They go to Minnesota. They go to Wisconsin's another hot button and area. So what we're seeing is they're coming to our communities, and they love rural communities because we exactly the reason you said we don't think it's happening here. And this is a hidden crime that wants to stay hidden. So if we don't talk about it, then it's easy to facilitate. And so if we don't understand how to recognize it, how it happens, then we're a perfect state for it to be facilitated in. And we are on pace. Really, I would say we started offering services in 2016, but really started hitting the ground in 2018. And we are over 800 individuals that we've served between sex and labor trafficking in that short period of time. And the more I add staff, the more we talk about this, more survivors come forward. And so breaking the silence over this, and I highly encourage anybody who's listening, get educated, understand what this looks like. I think education brings power, knowledge brings power, and allows us to, you know, shed light on something that likes to remain dark, which is human trafficking.
Do we see it more, you brought it up earlier, do we see it more prevalent in the Native community? Is that, do you, are you somehow able to track those numbers that it's higher in that sure. community?
Yeah, we, you know, we've started tracking numbers. There wasn't any state numbers really being tracking this. Department of Public Safety has now added questions and is tracking these numbers. But we have our own numbers of those that we serve. 52% of who we serve are from Native country. And the other are Caucasian, Black, White. There isn't a stereotype to this. So this is business. You have a demand, which is your purchaser. It's a person who's buying somebody or exploiting them for labor. So it could be that they want a blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl who is 11 to 14 because that's their preference. Guess what that trafficker is going to go recruit? He's going to go recruit what the demand is requesting. And so what we see is these different circles of facilitation of this illegal activity have different demand. And so there isn't one stereotype or one demographic that we see from the buyer to even sometimes the trafficker. We see a lot of gang cartel-related trafficking as well, where it's more organized. It's an organized front. And then we see, you know, when we talk about events like Sturgis Rally, which we have 500,000 plus people on the ground, and they do sting operations during Super Bowl, you know, which have 60 plus thousand people on the ground. You know, we have an activity that's happening here in South Dakota, and we just need to do a better job of identifying it. And then we also have hunting season. When you have large groups of people coming into communities, this is when this is facilitated, because if there is a demand for it, there is also a individual who supply that, which is the business person who we call the trafficker. And so this is a $150 billion industry. We have more people in modern-day slavery today, over 40 million people. And I am here to tell you, we do not have accurate numbers of this because we don't talk about it. It was not put into federal statute until 2000. And when it was put in, it's only been 22 years, and we're just probably in the last 10, maybe 8 years talking about it and giving light to this particular issue. But it's been happening for many, many years. And so if you haven't seen a presentation or you have not got educated, please do, because it is happening within our rural communities as well, and it is happening within our reservations, and it's happening in Pennington County, and it's happening in Minnehaha County. Polaris, which is the National Human Trafficking Hotline, has a stat that every county in the United States has had a report. So nobody's immune to this particular legal activity.
We appreciate you jumping on again. We kind of just scratched the surface on this topic. Hopefully we can get you on again real soon and kind of go more into your great organization again, calltofreedom.org, calltofreedom.org to learn more. Training, events, you can get involved, and you can also donate, I would imagine, like any non-for-profit. You need funds.
Yeah, we for sure do. You can go to calltofreedom.org if you want to volunteer, if you're in the area, or if you want to donate to us. We do obviously receive monetary donations, and we also have wish lists, you know, simple things like hygiene products, that, you know, things that we take for granted. They don't have those when they walk in the doors of Call to Freedom. A lot of them don't have their identification. They don't know where they're going to get their next meal from or where they're going to lay their head. Most of them never have their own apartment. And so when we provide these essential items, these basic needs, it also allows them to not be vulnerable. So you can give in many different ways, and we welcome you to join the fight. We want everyone to be a part of this in some way or passion or in one way or another, if that's volunteering, giving your monetary, or providing gift cards. We welcome all of that. And you can find that on calltofreedom.org.
Again, calltofreedom.org. Next time we get you on, maybe we could talk about some events, some signs of human trafficking. We can get into that a little bit more. But right now, we'll bid you a day, and hopefully we can get you on again real soon.
We would love the opportunity. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the opportunity.